The spirit of Sam Two Wolves returned to Earth with fire and power. The fire was in his back, where it felt like it must surely consume his flesh to the bone. The power was in the corded muscles of his neck and jaw as he braced himself to keep from crying out aloud. That he would not do. He would not give them the satisfaction of hearing him moan, lest they think he was begging for their mercy. As if these insects were capable of mercy. As if they even knew what it was. Sam ground his teeth together and concentrated on holding his silence and bearing his pain.
The white ones are gone. You can return now. They're gone.
Sam shuddered and opened his eyes. He was back in the prison tunnel. No, not a tunnel, an adit. That was it. Along with the others. He had not been aware of the passage of time, but it seemed to be night. Sam was lying face down on a pallet of old rags. Nana was kneeling at his side along with Blue Runner and another of the Yaqui. The silent Yaqui picked up a plump spear of succulent cactus and used his thumbnail to split the cactus flesh, exposing a green ooze that he smeared onto Sam's back. The jelly-like cactus was shockingly cold at first touch. Then it melted into the damaged skin. Soothing. Healing. The effect was immediate. It was not complete. There was still pain, but the worst of the fire had been extinguished. Sam peered at the odd, fat, thornless cactus leaves and raised an eyebrow.
Aloe, it is one of the healing plants. They let us pick some today on our way back from work.
Have I? How long?
2 days. They thought you would die. Old Man Leathershirt says you will live. The white ones were wrong.
Old Man Leathershirt, he did indeed have a leather shirt, but he was far from being old, continued to apply the marvelously soothing aloe jelly, splitting one leaf after another and tossing the used ones aside.
Tomorrow, they will want to see you kneel.
A man is free to want whatever his heart pleases, eh?
You will kneel?
I will not.
Can you move?
I think so.
Tomorrow, you will be expected to work.
That I can do. But I will not kneel to them.
You will do what is right for you to do.
That I will.
Sit up now. Your supper's ready. It's here.
Thank you.
Sam accepted their help, Nana's and Blue Runner's, to pull him upright. His head spun dizzily, but he shook it off and felt much better once he was sitting up.
We ate the food they gave for you yesterday and this morning.
Sam smiled ruefully and shrugged. Old Man Leathershirt tossed the rest of the aloe aside and handed Sam a bucket of stew to rebuild his strength for tomorrow's trials. In the morning, there was no sign of Case Wilhelm when the prisoners were led out for their work assignments. Three of the other guards handled them.
You!
One of the guards gestured toward Sam with the muzzle of his shotgun.
Arastra! And you!
He pointed to Blue Runner.
I told you they want us to live. They need our work. Today you will have easy work, so you will get strong again. Later, you go to the pit. Today, not so bad.
Anything a man is required to do that involves him being in chains is bad.
Quiet!
Sam stood silent and glowering, while the others were marched away to the pit while he and Blue Runner were left on the surface. One guard remained with them. He motioned with his shotgun, and the prisoners started shuffling down a path to the bowl-shaped arastra, where they would be expected to turn a huge, wheel-like disc of stone to pulverize ore from the pit the same way grains of wheat are ground into flour by the miller's wheel. The only halfway good thing about the task, aside from it being considerably less taxing than the back-breaking labor and ferocious heat inside the pit, was that lengths of chain were suspended from the thick wooden pole that ran through the stone like an axle. The prisoners were required to push on that pole, turning in circles round and round. The chain was there so they could hang their anchoring iron balls on the drive bar, freeing their legs of that drag while they made their slow, incessant circles around the arastra. The guard explained the process for the new men, miming the actions as well as giving verbal instruction so as to get through to them in case they did not speak English.
All you do is keep that thing turning, and don't think about stopping unless I tell you so. I'll give you a break about noon so as you can have some water. Other than that, just do what you're told, and we won't have no trouble, you and me.
Sam reached for the iron S-hook to clip his iron ball onto the axle bar, then stood as patient and outwardly docile as any donkey, while Blue Runner went around to the other side of the crusher to take his position there.
Begin!
Sam leaned into the bar and began to push. Matt stopped beside his horse, still tied outside the saloon, and unbuckled the near saddlebag. He reached inside for the yellow pasteboard box of cartridges there, and frowned a little when he realized how light it was. There were only 10 of the fat brass cartridges remaining. He stuffed those into empty loops on his gun belt and took the yellow box in one hand and the horse's reins in the other. He wanted to make a stop at the hardware anyway, and might as well do it now, on his way to the livery where the bartender said he might get word about Sam. He tied the horse to a rail near the hardware and went inside the adobe-walled building, grateful for the shade and the relative coolness inside.
Yes, sir, what can I do for you?
Matt dropped his empty cartridge box on the counter.
I'd like a couple boxes of these, Sankey, and some information if it suits you.
The cartridges I got. The information I'll share if I have what you need.
The fellow opened a cabinet beneath the counter, took out two very heavy little boxes, each holding 50 rounds of ammunition, and set them onto the counter.
$1.50 apiece for the cartridges. Now what information would you be wanting?
Matt paid for his ammunition and inquired about Pete Branville and Sam Two Wolves.
I know Pete, of course. He's a good man. Haven't seen him in, probably a couple weeks, though. He didn't say anything about taking a trip or nothing like that. As for your brother, I haven't seen anybody like that. I wish I could help you, sorry.
Thanks, anyway.
Matt smiled and started to turn away, then stopped again, his attention riveted on a half dozen or so holstered revolvers hanging from a coat tree behind the counter.
See something you like there, do you?
I don't know. Maybe. That rig at the bottom with the plain leather and brass buckle. Could I see that gun, please?
The storekeeper obligingly took the gun belt down, pulled out the revolver, opened the loading gate and turned the cylinder to assure himself that the gun was unloaded and safe to handle, then passed it across to Matt. Matt felt a chill run up his spine. This was Sam's .45, and Sam's holster as well.
What do you know about this gun?
Not much. Bought it off Lieutenant Espinoza. He's the officer in charge of the garrison here. I don't know how he come by it. It isn't something he would have been issued by the Mexican government, though, so I figured he wasn't selling government property or nothing like that. Tell you the truth, mister, I didn't need another used gun to sit around gathering dust, but it's a good idea to stay on the sunny side of that lieutenant. And he offered to sell it to me cheap. If you're interested, I'll pass it along for a good price.
I'm interested.
Matt dug into his pocket for money to buy Sam's Colt back. 5 minutes later, Sam's gun belt rolled and tucked away in Matt's saddlebags. Matt led his horse into the livery barn. An elderly fellow emerged from the tack room, blinking and rubbing at his eyes. Matt seemed to have roused him from a nap.
I'm looking for a man named Doc Tippett. Tim Rogers down at the saloon said I could find Tippett here.
I'm Tippett. Got trouble with your horse?
No trouble, no. But I'd be willing to make a swap if you have anything I like.
I have a few head out back, and you can go look over. Help yourself while I take a gander at your animal.
Matt nodded and passed through the barn and outside to a corral in the back. There were 5 head of saddle stock in the pen, along with a pair of long-eared mules and a burro. One of those horses belonged to Sam Two Wolves. Matt's jaw clenched tight, and he fought back an impulse to break into a rage. He regained control by the time Tippett came outside to join him.
See anything you like?
Matt jerked his chin in the direction of Sam's animal.
Yes. What can you tell me about that one?
I don't know much about him. My hired man's son took him in when I wasn't here. He said some Indio had him. Yaqui, maybe. Apache, one of them. I wasn't here, so I wouldn't know. Anyway, the Indian never came back. I asked the alcalde about it, and he said I should consider the horse as abandoned property. He gave me a bill of sale to make sure everything was on the up and up.
And this alcalde of San Iba, who would he be?
Lieutenant Antonio Espinosa. He's the commander of the army garrison in addition to civil duties. Whatever they are.
You don't care for the lieutenant?
No more than I care for a basket full of rattlesnakes. In fact, somewhat less. But if you live in San Eba, you take Espinosa along with the good.
That horse belongs to my brother Sam.
But Espinosa said...
Sam's father was a respected chief of the Cheyenne Nation, but his mother is a lady from a wealthy Vermont merchant family.
And he's your brother?
Blood brother. We grew up together.
Mister, if I was you, I'd ride on out of here and say nothing more about this. The lieutenant, he don't like to admit he could ever make a mistake.
Well, he made a good one this time. What has happened to Sam? Is he in jail? What do you think Espinosa did with him?
I don't actually know anything, mind you. I've never been out there.
There?
What I've heard is that Espinosa hires out convict labor to a white man named Gerald Williams.
I've met Williams.
Williams is said to have a place out on Conquistador Mountain. I've never been there myself. All I know is hearsay, and you know what that could be worth.
Tell me anyway.
When he first come here, Williams tried to hire local labor to work out there. He wanted to reopen an old mine, he said. But the Mexicans and the local Indians won't have anything to do with Conquistador. They say the mountain is cursed. If you just mention it out loud, they'll start to pray and cross themselves and ward off evil spirits. The place frightens them so bad, Williams couldn't get one of them to take his money. And I hear tell that what he wants done is work that no white man's gonna accept neither. So he pays Espinosa for convict labor.
It sounds like a dirty game.
Oh, it is. But it's common enough. Most any prison in this country hires out convicts for labor.
I want to buy my brother's horse and rig off of you, Mr. Tippett. And I'm still interested in making a swap for my own use. Maybe for that ugly thing in the corner over there if he moves and rides all right.
Matt pointed toward a bay standing hip-shot and lazy behind the others.
Ugly? Yes, but he might be the best horse in this county, barring your brother's animal. You have a good eye for horse flesh.
Tippett led the bay out and gave Matt time to inspect it. The horse was 8 or so years old and in good health. Matt used a loop of lead rope to fashion a makeshift hackamore and leaped onto the bay's bare back to put it through its gates.
I'm satisfied. How do you want a deal?
I'll take your horse and trade in $75 cash. You can have your brother's horse and saddle. No charge for those.
I expect you had to pay Espinosa a little gratuity of some sort when he gave you the bill of sale.
No matter.
Even so, I want to reimburse you for that. And I'll take the bay. Tell you the truth, I would have paid more than that for him if you asked.
Oh, son, don't ever tell that to a horse trader. Takes all the pleasure out of the deal.
Sorry, Mr. Tippett. I didn't mean to mess up your fun.
Matt transferred his gear onto the bay horse, then saddled Sam's and tied a light lead to its bit.
You could do one more thing for me if you would.
You'll be wanting directions to Conquistador Mountain, I expect.
Yes, sir, I guess I will.
All right, then, here's what you do.
Stop!
The order was one Sam was perfectly willing, even eager, to obey. He came to a halt, as did Blue Runner on the other side of the Arastra bar. The guard cradled his shotgun in the crook of his arm, lifted his hat, and used it to shade his eyes as he peered toward the sun, judging its progress across the pale copper bowl of the sky.
Noon!
Sam shook his head. The guard was a foolish man. Rather than inflict upon himself the discomfort of looking into the sun, he could more easily and just as accurately determine the same thing by looking down instead, to the shadows that also gave testimony to the sun's progress. The guard motioned to Blue Runner with the muzzle of his scattergun.
You! Unhook yourself and come over here!
He pointed to Sam.
You! Take your ball off the bar and stand there!
Blue Runner staggered a little under the weight of the iron ball he was forced to carry, no doubt also because of the influences of fatigue and heat. The day was blazing hot, and all three men were dripping wet with sweat. When Blue Runner and Sam were standing side by side, the guard nodded toward the flat plateau where the buildings were.
March!
With Sam and Blue Runner leading the way and the armed guard close behind, they moved up onto the bench and across it to the building that seemed to be the headquarters. Despite the heat of the day, there was smoke coming from a stovepipe on the roof, and the scent of cooking food drifted into the yard. The guard moved them past the building to a pair of huge oaken barrels. Small buckets of the same sort that food was served in were piled beside the barrels.
Each of you fill a bucket.
Fill with what?
There's water in the vats. fill the buckets with that. And take a dipper, each of you. There's dippers hanging on some nails behind the vats. You'll see when you get over there. You're gonna take water down to the men in the pit. That's part of the job of the Arastra crew. You gotta carry water to the other men. After all, you got the easy job. They're the ones doing all the work.
Easy, Sam thought, walking around in circles, pushing a heavy crusher under a boiling hot sun for hour after hour. Yeah, easy. He picked up a bucket and a dipper, and while he was engaged in filling the bucket to carry down to the others, managed a drink for himself, too. The water was as warm as spit, but was revitalizing in spite of that. He dumped another dipperful over his head, enjoying the feel of it trickling down over his chest and across his ribs.
Don't be wasting water, or time neither. Take those buckets down and let the others drink. Go on now! And don't forget, you're being watched every step of the way.
The shotgun guard remained on the lip over the open pit along with a pair of fellow guards, while Sam and Blue Runner made their way down the narrow, winding path to the bottom of the pit where some sort of ore, Sam had no idea what the material was being extracted. Making it to the bottom without falling was precarious business, Sam discovered, burdened as they were by the buckets in one hand and their iron balls and chains in the other. A slip near the top would likely be fatal. A fall from farther down the path would probably have resulted in a broken limb at the very least. As they neared the bottom of the pit, Sam had the impression that they were descending into warm water rather than open air. No hint of breeze could possibly reach the bottom, and the heat was stifling. It was difficult to breathe, and he could feel the sun's burning heat like a heavy blanket laid over him on a torpid summer's day. It was no wonder that the men who were required to work down here glistened with sweat. And no wonder either why the guards made the effort to send water down. Having to work without water to replenish the fluids lost in sweat in heat like this would lead to sure heat stroke, even death. Sam doubted very much that the men who ran this place cared a thing about the welfare of their workers. But they surely cared very deeply that those laborers remain alive and capable of producing work. Chunks of something, he did not know what, were being extracted from the rock in this man-made pit on the mountainside. Obviously, the stuff had to be valuable, if, Sam thought, it could be mined cheaply enough. Probably the ore was of a low grade, not worth enough to justify paying a decent wage to professional miners, or even to the peons who live nearby. But slave labor is as cheap as it is possible to get, and a corrupt system of so-called justice was capable of producing the necessary labor. That would explain why all the prisoners here, slaves was more like it, were Indians of one tribe or another. The so-called wild tribes had no legal standing on the Mexican side of the border, and the mine would likely accommodate as many as could be arrested down in San Iba, charged with almost anything, and then sentenced to hard labor, the mine owners likely paying the officer in charge of the local garrison for the services of his prisoners. Sam had heard of such things before, including in the southern part of his own United States, but he had not expected to run into anything like it. The men dropped their implements, picked up their balls and chains, and came limping as fast as they could to surround the water carriers and grab for the dipper handles. Sam shuddered, thinking that soon he would be forced to work down here too. As bad as working the Arastra was, this was 10 times worse. And the worst part of all was the humiliation. Sam August Webster Two Wolves was and would always be a warrior. He would much prefer death to any other course. Soon enough, he realized, he would have to make a choice between slavery and a warrior's proud death. Or more accurately, soon enough, he would have to act upon the only true course that was open to him. Unless Matt got here first. Matt felt a prickly tingle between his shoulder blades, and the hair on the back of his neck began to feel stiff. It was a sensation he had felt before, and on more than one occasion, it was a feeling that saved his bacon. On the other hand, sometimes when he'd felt this way, it was only a case of nerves. Sometimes nothing turned out to be wrong except his own worries. Still, A man is a fool if he takes chances when an angel on his shoulder whispers warnings in his ear. He reined the bay horse off the wagon road and into some brush that was uphill from the right of way. More curious now than concerned, Matt dismounted and tied both his horse and Sam's, then slipped down the slope to a position where he could remain concealed from anyone passing below, but where he had a good command of the roadway. If he needed it. That still remained to be seen. If anyone was following, they were doing a good job of keeping out of sight. Matt very nearly decided that he was imagining things, that Sam's trouble simply had him spooked. He was about ready to turn and go back up to the horses.
Huh?
He cocked his head over to one side and closed his eyes, listening intently and trying to filter out the faint sounds around him. Matt opened his eyes again in time to see the bob of a horse's head coming around a slight curve in the road in the direction from which he'd just come. A gray horse came into view, the rider a dark-complected man wearing the broad hat and leather breeches of a vaquero. The gray walked fully into view, and then a brown horse behind it, and soon after it, a third. The riders were all lean men with pistols on their hips and carbines carried balanced across their pommels. Matt frowned when he saw that. He could clearly see that there were rifle scabbards strapped onto the horses' saddles, yet those carbines were in the riders' hands, ready for quick action. Somehow Matt did not think these men were out for an afternoon of hunting deer. Scowling, he hunkered low behind a screen of brush. Those riders held carbines ready, while Matt's long gun was in its scabbard a good 10 yards distant. He waited, watching, while the vaqueros drew nearer. The workers gulped down full dippers of the precious water, acting as if they were desperate for it, yet Sam could not help but notice that these men who represented very different tribes and immeasurably different cultures were meticulous in their concern that they take no more than was theirs, and that the dipper quickly be passed to the next man in line.
You see what it is here, Two Wolf. Tomorrow, or the other tomorrow, you will work here. You will know then.
Why do you work? Why do you do what they want of you?
Coronado stood more fully upright and tossed his head defiantly.
I am not afraid. I am Coronado, and I am warrior.
I understand that, but why do you do what they want? You said that no man lives to walk free from here. If that is so, then why do you stay? Why do you work? Why do you not kill a guard before one of them kills you, or the work itself kills you?
Coronado's expression hardened, but his eyes slid away from Sam's. The man felt shame, Sam suspected. Shame because he had not chosen a warrior's death over this servitude and chains.
We have spoken of these things among ourselves. We talk of this, of many things. In our bellies, each believes he will live to the end of the time the white men say must be served here. Each believes he will be the one who is strong, the one who... I do not have the English word.
The one who survives.
Yes, survive. The one who survive. Each believe he will be that one. Will go home to Wikiup, hold his woman in the night, and see his son strong. Will again be free man, you know?
I know.
And indeed, Sam did. He too yearned for freedom. But if for one instant he truly believed that he would not live to achieve freedom again, he would prefer the warrior's proud death. Sam paused a moment and braced himself while the men jostled for the dipper handle. Apparently, their rules of peculiar etiquette ended once every man had received his first full dipper of water. After that, it was every man for himself. It occurred to him that this belief, this reaching for the luxury and the joy of freedom, was exactly what Coronado just explained. It was what kept the prisoners from bolting in a futile, self-destructive rush into the muzzles of the guns. Each man in his heart believed he would somehow survive to be released and to return to his people, that he would again see his woman and his children. It was not fear that held these men in check, Sam realized. It was hope. And hope was a far more powerful thing than fear. In himself, in these men as well. Sam tipped the bucket so the parched workers could get the last of the water, and when even that would not allow them to scoop anything into the dipper, he tilted the bucket and poured the last drops from it.
That's enough lollygagging! Get back to work! Do it now!
Reluctantly, the prisoners shuffled back to their labors, the sweat that had glistened on their bodies already dried in the intense, furnace-like heat at the bottom of the ore pit. Soon enough, they would be sweating again.
You with the buckets! Get up here! Tis ain't no holiday for you neither!
Sam picked up the iron ball and cupped it in one hand while he carried the empty bucket in the other. He began the steep, laborious climb back to the mountainside bench where the mine buildings lay. And the guards. The guards with their shotguns and their scowls waited there too. Matt waited until the vaqueros were a few feet past, then stepped out into the road.
Are you boys looking for anyone in particular?
He found it perversely amusing to note how sharply the three men jumped when they heard his voice behind them. One man very nearly dropped his carbine, and two of the horses tried to bolt when they felt the unexpected movement of their riders. The men drew rein and stopped dead in the road. None of the three men turned around to see who had spoken. If Matt needed any proof that these three were up to no good, he figured that right there was enough to give it. Innocent men, even if they thought they were being robbed, would surely turn around to see who was there. Whether he was alone, whether there were guns pointed at them now. These three already knew, or assumed they knew.
You can drop your guns now. They aren't cocked, I can see that. They aren't going to go off from hitting the ground, so just open your hands and let them fall. The rifles first. We'll deal with your belly guns in a minute. Drop the carbines, boys. Do it now.
As soon as the sounds were out of his mouth, Matt moved sideways, back closer to the brush-covered hillside. He wanted to shift silently away from the point where he was last known to have been. Just in case. Just in case the Mexicans did what, in fact, they did do. The three sat where they were for a moment, their backs still toward Matt. But he could see from the movement of their heads and the working of their bearded jaws that they were talking softly among themselves. If they were speaking Spanish, they could as easily have laid their plans as loudly as they pleased, and he would not understand a word. But then they would not know that. In fact, he did not know for sure that they spoke English and had understood his instructions. He hoped they had, because he sure couldn't repeat the orders in Spanish for them. They whispered for some moments, pretending not to. Then at some signal that Matt did not see, the three of them moved, quickly and as one. All three yanked their horses around in a lightning spin. At the same time, all three whipped their carbine barrels forward, the short rifles held like pistols. All three muzzles sought one target. Except Matt was not standing where they expected him to be, where his voice had just come from. One of the vaqueros was so keyed up, his hand was tightening on the trigger even before his carbine barrel came online with the intended target. The muzzle blast of hot gases from his carbine's discharge flashed behind the ear of the next rider's horse and spooked it into a head-down, hoof-flying explosion. The bullet sailed somewhere down the road in the general direction of San Eva, miles distant. The rider on the bucking horse grabbed for leather and dropped his carbine. The weapon was cocked and ready to fire, and when the muzzle hit the ground, the jar dislodged the hammer sear. The force of that small, contained explosion drove the carbine upward to bang against the belly of the rider's already very unhappy horse. The man lost control of his mount, and it went tearing down the road toward San Eva, as if chasing after the first man's uselessly spent bullet, which left one armed man sitting astride a calm and steady horse and one very rattled man who carried a pistol in his sash and a rifle in his hands, but whose carbine had a spent cartridge in the chamber and whose hands were full from trying to manage both horse and rifle at the same time. The one vaquero who was not rattled had a look of faint amusement on his lips. He shook his head very slightly and then smiled.
So, Señor Bodin, it is only you and me now. Is this not so?
You know who I am.
Ay, señor. I have heard of you. I have heard you are a man who is with the fast gun. Is this not so?
Fast is a relative term.
You still live, Senor Bodin?
Yes, I reckon I do. Are you here working for Gerald Williams? Or for that lieutenant, whatever the heck his name is?
Espinosa. The lieutenant's name is Espinosa.
Thank you.
Not that this information is of consequence. I do not work for any man, Senor Bodin. Not at this moment, no. But I think maybe someone will pay me a small reward for having shot you, Senor. Someone is sure to thank me, and this will be to my advantage and my honor.
Ah, but you are forgetting one thing, Senor. What was your name again, sir?
I am Juan Escobar Estero Garcia, Senor. Now, Senor, what is this thing that you say I forget?
Before you collect your reward, Juan, don't you reckon you should first do the job?
Oh, you mean I should shoot you before I may claim that your scalp belongs to me?
Exactly.
Garcia gestured to the rider who was beside him, and that man looked unhappy, but he didn't say anything. He put the spurs to his horse and went galloping down the road in the direction where the third rider had disappeared.
I have sent both my companions away, Senor. I want everyone to know that it was I who brought down the famous Senor Bodin and no other.
I hate to keep reminding you of the same old thing, Juan, but you haven't brought nobody down.
Oh, but I will, Senor. I will. Would you do me the honor to meet me mano a mano, Senor?
I don't know what that means.
In your language, the expression would be face to face. It is not a translation, you understand. Our expression is hand on hand, but the meaning, it is the same.
I see.
Please allow me to put this clumsy rifle aside and to get down from my horse. I would not want your bullet to go astray and strike him when I shoot you, Senor. He is a good horse. Not so fast, but very strong. Would you permit this?
Sure, Juan. Go right ahead if you like.
Garcia shifted his grip on the carbine so that he held it by the action, not the grip. He leaned down and slid the weapon into its scabbard and then, still smiling, stepped down from the horse. He shooed the animal off to the side, then dropped the reins to ground tie it.
So, gracias, señor. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, Juan.
Garcia wore his pistol like a man who knew what to do with one. It was at a sensible height, neither dangling ridiculously low on his thigh, nor perched up under his armpit, either extreme having its faults. The Mexican tilted his head hard to one side and then to the other to loosen any tightness in his neck or shoulders. He drew in a long, deep breath and let it out again, smiling all the while.
Do you wish a moment to pray, Senor?
No thanks. But you go right ahead if you like.
Garcia closed his eyes. His lips moved, and he mumbled under his breath for a few moments. When he opened his eyes again, his expression was serious and calm.
I have prayed for your soul, Senor.
And for your own, I hope.
Yes, Senor, and for mine as well. Do you wish time to prepare?
I'm always prepared, Juan.
In that case, Senor?
Garcia's hand flashed. He was quick, fast as a striking rattler. He might even have been the fastest man Matt ever faced, ever saw. Matt was faster.
You shot me, Senor.
Matt gave a look back down the road, but there was no sign of the other vaqueros. He stood silently there for a moment, then flicked open the loading gate of his revolver. He hoped Garcia's prayers had been heard. Matt picked up Garcia's revolver and stuffed it back into the man's plain and very businesslike holster. The kindest thing he could do now, he figured, would be to tie the body back on the horse and then turn the animal loose to return to wherever home was. The whole thing seemed an awful waste. The bay horse began to stamp and fidget beneath him. Matt's hand curled back on the reins without conscious thought and reaction. He was pleased with the horse, but it would need to learn to stand steady for however long Matt chose. And right now, he was much more interested in the view below him on the mountainside than he was in paying attention to a horse. Matt had left the marked road a half mile or so behind and below, angling instead up a worn game trail that climbed a barren, rocky slope to this spot above Gerald Williams's old conquistador mine. From here, he could get a look at the layout, at the open pit where men wearing balls and chains labored in killing heat. at a tunnel opening and collection of shacks that obviously had been built in recent years, and at a much smaller pit on a bench below the ledge where the mine was located. It was this small pit that held Matt's interest now. In it, two men were chained to either end of a timber that ran like an axle through a round stone wheel. The two were turning the wheel round and round inside this bowl-like depression, crushing ore that the other prisoners extracted from the mine. One of these men was Sam August Webster Two Wolves, in chains, his shirt ragged and torn, his back bloodied. While Matt watched, the man on the other end of the axle pole called out something and tried to stop, but Sam continued pushing as if he hadn't heard. More than likely, Matt realized, his brother indeed had not heard. Sam probably had retreated into himself, into a trance-like state of prayer and meditation where he spoke with his Cheyenne ancestors and invoked spirits Matt could only guess at. As close as Matt was to Sam and to the Cheyenne people, there were some places where he could not follow. Matt knew from past experience that when Sam was in one of those states, he was virtually impervious to outside influences, even pain. There seemed to be only three men guarding the... how many? 9 prisoners total that Matt could see. And like Doc Tippett suggested, all the prisoners looked like Indians with dark skin and black hair. Their three guards all carried shotguns. Matt was tempted to step down from the bay and find a nice spot where he could stretch out with his rifle and a firm rest from which to shoot. The three guards would go down like roosters being prepared for Sunday dinner. 1, 2, 3. Matt could put the last one down almost before the first had time to hit the ground. He was tempted, but he knew he would not do it. Not like that. For all he knew, these men were hired in good faith and thought they were legitimately guarding desperados. Matt was not going to gun them down from ambush. Although, seeing what had been done to Sam, it was mighty tempting. Instead, Matt dismounted and walked back to Sam's horse. He pulled the cinches tight, having left them a little loose for the horse's comfort and stamina while they traveled. Now, he did not know if Sam might need to make a fast getaway, chains and all. If he did, he would not want to have to put up with a saddle slipping and flopping around under him. Matt saw to Sam's cinches and tightened his own, then mounted again and headed back down the way he had come after he left the game trail. When he reached the road, he turned up in the direction of the mine. A sign posted beside the road warned private property, no trespassing in English and Spanish, with a large skull and crossbones symbol to emphasize the message for those who could not read either language. Matt paid the sign no mind. Sam's chest swelled with a fierce joy that bubbled through his blood and roared in his ears as he saw his brother ride down from the trail. Matt had come. Of course.
Hey, you! What'd you stop pushing for? I didn't tell you that you could take a rest!
Sam hadn't even realized that he had quit pushing the Arastrobar. He stood now watching Matt approach. Sam glanced at the guard with disdain, then motioned with his chin toward the lone horseman. The guard turned.
The boss ain't here, if it's work you're looking for.
Thank you, but I've already found what I came for.
Matt drew rein and stepped down from his horse. The guard looked puzzled, but not worried. After all, he had a shotgun, and he was in charge. He had no need for concern.
Are you friends with one of the fellas? Virgil, maybe? Are you the fellow Virgil was drinking with the other night? Sorry, but visitors ain't welcome, mister. You'll have to go on back to town. But I can give Virgil a message for you if you want.
I don't know anybody named Virgil, friend. And I'm not here to visit anyone. I'm here to get my brother.
Your brother?
That's right. My brother.
Who's your... mister? You don't mean one of the prisoners, do you?
Yes, I do, friend. That one.
But you can't.
Oh, I can. Trust me about this. I can and I will. Now, where's the key to that ugly chain thing?
There's no key. It's welded. Not that it makes no difference. He ain't going nowhere. I'm here to see to it.
Now, friend, I'm trying to be nice about this.
There's a blacksmith shack up by the mine. We should be able to find a hammer and cold chisel there. By the way, it's nice to see you, Matt, now that you finally got here, even though you took your own sweet time about it.
See here, you two. I won't hear any more talk about cold chisels and stuff like that. This man is a prisoner of the Alcalde of San Iba, and it is my job to see that he stays right here.
Sorry, he's coming with me.
Over my dead body!
Friend, if that's the way you want it, then that is the way it can be. But I warn you, if you thumb back the hammers on that scattergun of yours, I'll cut you down.
But...
lay the shotgun down and step very carefully away from it. You can go with us to the blacksmith shack. After you cut that chain off my brother, you can go on your way, alive. Or you can lie here dead and we'll find the blacksmith shack without you. It's your choice.
The guard lifted the shotgun as if he was thinking about offering resistance. Matt's hand flashed, and the guard found himself looking down the barrel of a Colt 45.
My God, mister, don't shoot!
The guard turned pale. Very quickly, he bent and placed the shotgun on the ground at his feet.
Thank you.
Matt holstered his revolver and motioned the guard away from the gun. Sam lifted his chain down from the arrastra bar and held the heavy iron ball to his belly so he could walk up the hill with Matt. Sam's heart was soaring, and he silently offered up prayers of thanks to the spirits of his ancestors.
You all right, Sam?
I will be. Now.
You do pick the strangest ways to have fun. Must be the Indian in you.
You white boys aren't the only ones who know how to have a good time, you know.
The unhappy guard walked nervously in front of Matt, and the Yaqui Indian Blue Runner was coming up the hill behind them. Blue Runner was struggling to carry his iron ball and the guard's shotgun, which he had picked up and brought along. The guard indicated the blacksmith shack.
Over there!
Lead the way. You can take those chains off.
Sam aimed his thumb at Blue Runner.
Off him, too. He's a friend.
Him, too.
The guard opened the doors to the blacksmith shop and picked up a hammer and chisel. With the proper tools, it took little to break the welds and remove the ankle strap from Sam and then from Blue Runner.
You fellas are going to be in an awful lot of trouble once Mr. Williams and the Alcalde hear about this. You know I'll have to tell them who done this.
Matt smiled at the man and slapped him on the back.
Tell them whatever you please. Just remember that you're alive to be able to tell them.
Yes, sir.
Matt turned to Sam.
What about those other men down inside that hole out there?
I think Blue Runner is already doing something about that.
The Yaqui had taken the shotgun and trotted away in the direction of the pit as soon as he was free from the ball and chain. Sam ran to the rim of the pit and saw carnage below. Blue Runner was dead, cut down by a charge of buckshot, but so was one of the two guards. The other guard was either dead or dying. The prisoners were standing over the man, battering him with the iron balls attached to their leg chains. By the time Sam and the others got to the pit, there probably was not an unbroken bone remaining in the guard's body, and it seemed very unlikely that he could still be alive. The Indians would soon enough come up and free themselves from their chains. They would disappear into the mountains like smoke on a freshening breeze. Sam turned to the one remaining guard.
If you know what's good for you, you'd best hightail it out of here, or else find a good place to hide.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. I think I'm going to be sick.
The guard spun away from the sight of his dead friends. He was trembling so hard, it seemed difficult for him to stand. But he managed to break into a shuffling trot and then into a hard run. Sam turned to Matt. He grabbed Matt's forearm so that once again, as so very long ago, their wrists touched together at the place where their blood had flowed into one stream.
It is good that you came.
Yes, I reckon it is at that.
The two turned toward their horses. The two sat hunkered beside a tiny campfire that was no larger than the pot that sat over it. The rich aroma of boiling coffee surrounded them, as did the sound of trickling water. Sam had found a spot where spring water seeped out of the rock and flowed into a miniature waterfall into a small pool. The beauty of the tiny glen had nothing to do with why they'd stopped, however. The brothers had much to catch up on.
The man's name is Case Wilhelm.
Case? Where would that come from?
Sam shrugged. His powerful shoulders glistened with cold water from the pool. One of the first things he'd done when they got here, even before Matt had the fire together, was to strip and bathe the sweat and grime of captivity from his body. It might take more than a simple bath to remove the memories from his mind.
Short for Casey, would be my guess, but I could be wrong.
You? Wrong? Impossible.
Yeah, you'd think that so, wouldn't you? Anyway, whatever the man's name, we will see each other again, count on it. Except this time, I won't be in chains. And it will make no difference at all if there are men standing by with shotguns to protect him.
The bunch that was down there today sure won't be with him. Those Indians. What they did to the guards was sheer savagery.
And what the guards had done to them was sheer evil. Down here, Indians are regarded as vermin, Matt. There is no longer a bounty for our scalps and ears. But it is considered no crime to kill an Indian. I cannot find it in my heart to condemn those men. Even if they were Yaqui and Apache. While everyone knows that the only true human beings are a Cheyenne.
It's just lucky that I became a Cheyenne then, isn't it?
Yes, my brother. It is truly fortunate. Hand me that shirt, will you?
It's a good shirt. You aren't gonna wear that for every day, are you?
This is my best shirt. It is also my only shirt. Last one left. You need to buy some more.
Fine, but I don't recommend you do any shopping in San Iba.
Sam poured coffee for both of them and handed one cup to Matt. He settled the pot close beside the little smokeless fire, but not directly over it, wanting to keep the coffee hot, but not boiling.
You know, brother, there are times when I become disgusted with our government in the United States. Bureaucrats can be stupid at times and corrupt. It makes me furious. But every now and then, something will happen to make me remember and to appreciate the freedoms that we Americans take for granted.
Like now?
Yes, exactly like now. In America, even an Indian or a black man is regarded as a human being, with the right to life and whatever happiness he can find for himself. Even an Indian can be respected. And even a scrawny white boy can learn to make an acceptable cup of coffee.
Acceptable? This coffee is magnificent.
Matt reached to grab Sam in a wrestling hold, then pulled back when he saw the raw, ugly welts on his brother's back.
Ouch. Does that hurt?
I am Cheyenne. I am impervious to pain.
Yeah, I know that, but does it hurt?
Like the very devil.
I have a little salve in my saddlebags. I'll grease you up before you put your good shirt on. If you're going to wear the thing for every day, you might as well get it grubby right off the bat. Why wait?
I know I can always come to you for advice, my brother. And I know to always do the opposite of what you suggest. Now, you have heard my sad tale of woe. Tell me what you have accomplished. Why wasn't Pete with you, for instance? What is the reason he asked us to come here to begin with?
Matt filled Sam in on his recent activities.
No one seems to know what has happened to Pete. Nothing that they'll admit to, anyway.
I think I know where Pete is now.
Fine. Let's go get him. Anita and Ricardo are eaten up with worry about him going missing like this.
Unfortunately, Matt, I'm thinking Pete may be down the hill.
Like I said, let's go get him.
You misunderstand, brother. To the ones who are forced to slave in that mine, down the hill has a harsh meaning.
Sam explained the crude disposal method for the Indians who died under the lash there.
Why would you think Pete might be down this hill, then?
At night, while we ate, and for a little while afterward, we talked. Sometimes they included me in the conversations, or at least spoke in English so I could understand. The Apaches mentioned that there were some Mexicans who were sent down the hill, and there was a white man. Not many days before Blue Runner and I were captured, the big owner of the mine...
That would be Gerald Williams. He's the man in town who was so helpful to me with that Mexican army officer. I told you about him. He's a snake in the grass, but he helped me out that time.
Yes, I believe he helped me as well. I think he may be the man who sent for this Lieutenant Espinosa to arrest me. At any rate, he is the big boss. The Apache said one day the big boss and Espinosa and two soldiers came. They had a white man with them, but this white man was handcuffed. Nana's friend Tomas was pushing the Arastra that day. He and one of the Yaquis. The men on the Arastra were taken off the push bar and sent up to the mine with the Mexican soldiers so none of them could see. They heard nothing for a long while. Then there were two gunshots. After that, the big boss and Lieutenant Espinosa came up to the mine and the Indios were sent back down to finish the job of crushing the ore in the Arastra. There was no sign of the white man, but Tomas said some of the piled ore they were supposed to crush was gone, down the hill. It had to be because no one carried it away. the white man was killed and sent down the hill. Then his body was covered with tailings and even with some of the good ore. Tomas was pleased because it meant he had less work to do that day to make the quota at the Arashtra.
He cared nothing for the dead white man?
Tomas is Apache. Tomas cares for Apache. But he was good to me, even though I am Cheyenne.
You really think that could have been Pete they murdered?
They were not specific about the days, but from what you tell me about Pete's disappearance, I believe the timing fits.
This is gonna be hard on Anita. You haven't met her yet, but you'll like her. She's a fine girl. Deep in love with Pete, though. Losing him, that'll be tough.
Life is tough, and it is not fair. She has the boy, and there is a child on the way. She has family. She will turn to them. And they will all do the best they can. As for us?
Yeah, we're gonna do the best we can, too. For Pete and for you, too, Sam. I reckon we're gonna have to find a way to make it clear to those fellas that murdering folks and making slaves of them ain't a nice thing to do.
Do you think we should smite them, Matt?
With gusto.
Matt finished his coffee and poured another cup.
When that time comes, Sam, can I borrow your jawbone, please?
After a good night's sleep, the brothers brewed more coffee and mulled over their present situation.
I have been thinking.
That always worries me because it usually means trouble. But I know you're going to bust if you don't spit out whatever it is you're chewing on. Go ahead, tell me.
I have been thinking about Pete.
Yeah, this is going to be hard on Anita.
We do not really know that it was Pete that was killed and buried here.
No, I reckon we don't.
Matt reached for the coffee pot again, enjoying the aroma and the crisp pre-dawn air as much as the flavor of the dark brew.
I should have thought of that last night. Now it is too late.
For what?
I think we should find Pete. We should take him home to his family so they can make their prayers over him and see his spirit safely on its way. Besides, we do not truly know that it was Pete who was murdered there that day. Consider how terrible it would be for us to tell his wife that he is dead, only to have him turn up next week or next month or next year.
I would think she'd be happy to be wrong about that news.
Yes, but then she would know the pain of his death twice. Once now, and again when someday it really happened. No, I think we must find that body, and if it is Pete, we should take him home to his family.
Matt peered into the pale glow that rimmed the eastern horizon and took a moment to think about what Sam was saying.
Makes sense. Much as I hate to admit it, but that slope is bare, and by now that overseer and the rest of the guards ought to be back at the mine. There's no prisoners for them to put to work, but they'll be mad. They'll be on the prod today, Sam, and there's no place to hide on that bare, rocky slope.
Today will not be wasted. Tonight, you will keep watch while I go down and look for Pete.
Now, wait just a minute. You can't...
Whoa! I know what you intend to say, but listen to the truth before you speak. As much as I hate to admit this, Matt, between the two of us, you are the better shot. Quicker with the pistol by half a heartbeat, and straighter with the rifle by half a hair. That is true.
Nice of you to admit it.
Now, you should admit something else that is true. I have the gift of stealth and silence in a way that you never will. Oh, you are good, Matt. For a white man, you are the best I have ever seen. But I am better.
All right, brother. Playfulness aside, I reckon that's the bald truth. Mist drifting over top of the grass makes more noise than you do.
Good. We are in agreement about this. Today, I think you should ride to town, buy supplies. We have nothing to eat here but a few scraps of jerky gathering lint in the bottom of our saddlebags. And that is the last of our coffee, too. Looking for Pete may take some time. And we'll have to dig through unstable rock to look for him. And must do it without making sounds. We do not know how long it will be, so we should be prepared. Besides, I need new clothes.
Sam, if you think you're going to ride into San Eva...
No, foolish brother. That would not be wise. I will wait here. I will wait where I can watch the mine. It will be good to know how many are there and who they are.
You're thinking about that overseer, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You want to take him now? We can go down right now and see if he's there. See if he has nerve enough to face you when you aren't in chains.
No, Matt. Thank you. I know you would be there to back me up if this is what I choose to do, but no. We will see to Pete and his widow first. This thing with Case Wilhelm is personal. It can wait.
Sam smiled, but there was no hint of mirth in the expression now. His smile was cold and as hard as gunmetal.
It will give me time to look forward to the pleasure of facing him, man to man.
Matt looked at this dark, powerful man who was his brother, and a chill rushed through him. If he did not know Sam and trust him with his life, it would be easy to fear him when he was like this, distant and cold and turning inward to places where even Matt could not follow. They sat like that in silence until the sun lifted free of the horizon and their campfire was reduced to ash. Finally, though, Sam Two Wolves returned from whatever distant land he had been visiting. It happened in the blink of an eye. One moment, Sam squatted in stony silence beside the dead fire. The next moment, his dark eyes were full of life and warmth. His face split into a wide smile, and he reached out to touch Matt on the shoulder.
Come. We are wasting time here. Go to town, Matt. Get what we need. I will find a place where I can keep watch over the mine. I want to know how many are there and what their movements are now that they have no more slaves.
Matt nodded and reached for the coffee pot to pack it away. Saniba was a good 4-hour ride from the small Sweetwater pool where the brothers agreed to meet later in the day. Matt judged it was nearing 11 a.m. when he reached the town. He rode on through to the livery, where he turned his horse over to Doc Tippett.
Give him some grain if you would, please, Doc. And if you have time, you might prepare a couple of small sacks of grain that I can carry with me. I'd also like to rent that little mule you have and a pack saddle to put on him. I'll pay whatever your rate is.
The people in town here have been told to be wary of you, son. They say there was some sort of ruckus out at Gerald Williams' mine yesterday. No one I've talked to knows the details, but everyone says you are suspected.
I did nothing wrong, Doc. Did nothing to harm any man, not even in self-defense. I can tell you what happened, though. There was a revolt by the prisoners out there. They killed some of the guards and escaped into the mountains. I doubt anyone will ever see them again. Not around here, anyway.
Is that so?
The old man scratched inside his whiskers, then inspected his fingernail, when he was satisfied that the itch had been quelled.
Yes, sir, it's the truth. You might hear some fanciful accounts, but what I've just told you is what actually happened.
You sound sure about it.
I am. I was close by when it happened.
Close by?
Yes, sir.
Then you should know.
Tippett picked up the reins of Matt's bay.
I'll grain his horse and get the mule ready for travel. They'll both be ready by the time you get done with whatever it is you need to do.
Matt's first order of business was to find a good meal. He was on the verge of starvation, or felt like it anyway. Everything considered, however, he did not much feel like taking his meal at the hotel where Gerald Williams and his friends were often seen, or at the nearby saloon. Instead, he walked the short length of Saniba and pushed through the hanging fly beads that covered the door of a small, low-roofed cantina. He knew immediately that he had come to the right place. In addition to a roly-poly little Mexican behind the bar, there was a remarkably pretty girl engaged in quietly animated conversation with three vaqueros at a table in the back. Matt chose a seat where he had a good view across the room. Yes, sir, that was a very pretty girl. The girl patted one of the vaqueros on the wrist, gave the young man a pretty smile, and left the table. She was still smiling when she approached Matt.
Si, señor?
I'd like something to eat, please. Whatever you have, I'm not fussy. And a beer to wash it down.
Frijoles, señor?
What was that you said?
Beans, señor. Will beans be good?
Beans, sure. Do you have some meat to go with that? Beef, maybe?
Meat, yes. No beef today.
I'll take it, but I think maybe I'll be happier if you don't tell me what it is.
You will like it. This I promise.
She was right, too. Whatever the meat was, Matt suspected goat or possibly young lamb, it was tender and tasty. It went well with the beans. Those were so hot with spices that it was a wonder they didn't burst into flame, but they were good, and the beer cut some of the heat off Matt's tongue. He enjoyed his meal. Enjoyed the view at the other end of the room, too, where the girl returned to sit with the vaqueros. Matt was just finishing his meal when the fly beads clacked merrily and the room darkened slightly from the intrusion of a man's figure into the doorway. Matt recognized him. This was one of the men who had been with Gerald Williams the day the tough-talking, slow-drawing gunfighter braced Matt in Tim's saloon. For a moment, Matt thought he might be in for another fight, but the fellow's intentions turned out to be harmless. He walked to the bar and had a short, quiet conversation with the short, chubby Mexican there. Then the proprietor fumbled beneath the bar for a moment. He produced a dark, slender cigarillo and handed it to the American, who paid for the cheroot and left without another glance in Matt's direction. There was something about the man, though, something about the way he carried himself, a certain stiffness in the set of his shoulders and in the way he walked. It sharpened Matt's senses and left him on edge. Matt quickly stood and dropped a coin on the table to pay for his meal. All of a sudden, he wanted to get his shopping done and hightail it out of San Iba before there was more trouble. He already had enough of that on his plate for the moment.